This is the Canadian Investor, where you take control of your own portfolio and gain the confidence you need to succeed in the markets. Hosted by Braden Dennis and Simon Bélanger.
The Canadian Investor Podcast. Welcome into the show. My name is Braden Dennis. As always, joined by the graceful Simon Bélanger. Buddy, we are back in the saddle. You and I haven't sat down and recorded in a couple weeks. I'm pretty pumped. I was just on a trip through Southern California, and I had never been to California before. I had never even been to the West Coast unit. You've never been either?
I've never been either. No. Yep.
Like, as East Coasters, it's just like so classic to go to Florida 400 million times before, you know, you venture anywhere else in terms of going somewhere warm. But I liked it, man. I mean, it's what's not to like. The weather is, the hype about the weather is real. Like, you wake up and you're like, oh, it's perfect again. Great.
Like, I mean, I've been to Vegas multiple times. I've been to Vegas like 6 or 7 times, but that's because I enjoyed, you know, playing poker, but never made the trip to California. Although Vegas is very popular with Californians because I think you can drive there in like 4 hours or fly in like less than an hour.
That's right. You can just drive. And I played golf with some guys who, some younger guys, and one of them goes to the University of, it was spring break, so he goes to the University of Las Vegas, and then he was back in San Diego to golf, and I was playing with his two buddies. They're San Diego State D1 golfers who are going to be going pro.
Okay, yeah.
And one of them just casually shot a 66, and I didn't even know, like, that's how good he was. I didn't even notice he was 6 under, you know, through 14 holes. Like, it was absolutely absurd just playing with that level of of player, and just kind of tapping into their mindset too, just like so intense, such a young age and so committed to the game. Like, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I find it's interesting with athletes. I was like, I've noticed that like the past few years where I find you have two types of personalities. You have the ones that are like so intense, like you said, they're so focused on it, like it's their job, like they'll do anything. And then you have the other kind that are equally as successful, but for them, it's all about having fun. And if they stop having fun, the performance actually goes sideways. I don't know if you've noticed that too, but there tends to be like in a lot of athletes, it is like that. You have these like, you know, like you said, like super business focused. And then the other ones that, you know, they put in the work, but maybe differently a little bit. But for them, if they don't have fun, they lose all interest and the performance goes sideways too.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? Like, it's like anything, you know, if we didn't have fun doing this podcast, what are we episode like 375 now? Like,
it's getting
kind
there.
Of absurd. Yeah. Like, if we didn't have fun doing it, I mean, we still wouldn't keep doing it. All right. I got to tell you about someone I met. I'm at a conference and I meet this guy, and I'm obviously going to keep him anonymous for many reasons.
That's fair. Yeah.
He was telling me about this fund that he was co-managing in 07, was 5x levered. It had $20 billion, but it was 5x levered. So the AUM was $100 billion in total. It blew up, of course, with that much leverage going into 08. The entire fund was just a few hundred million dollars from $100 billion. And this guy was telling me how he had to like save the fund. The other guy left, and like he actually recuperated it like back to like $6 billion AM before he like moved on. But dude, leverage, man. Just listening to this guy's story, I sat down with him for probably 2-3 hours at this conference. I mean, I was supposed to be meeting with all these people, and I was just enthralled by this guy's story. We're sitting out on the patio at the Marriott Hotel, and I'm just like learning about the ins and outs of the blowups that happened in 07 and 08. And of course, you know, you and I know about them, but to get them firsthand experience from someone who was managing $100 billion and levered to the tits, Dude, I was like shook. I was like shook for like, you know, 3-4 hours after that combo. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, leverage, I mean, it cuts both ways, right? And especially in Canada where people, they probably are the most familiar with being levered if they purchase a home, right? And I don't know about you, maybe not as much because you're a bit younger, but for me, the perception I got is maybe, you know, let's say maybe not the last 2 years, but before that, it was basically like, you're stupid if you're not investing in real estate because you're essentially, you know, you're buying with debt, you're leveraging it up, and it's boosting your profits. But it cuts both ways. When it goes the other way around, you can get wiped out because you're over-levered. And whether it's real estate, whether it's investments, investing in stocks, levered, obviously crypto, there was even more craziness happening during the bull market where it was like, I think we could get like 100x to 1, something like that in certain sites. But I think it's a good reminder. Yes, you can really boost your profits if it goes well, but at the same time, you can also get wiped out. So just be aware because leverage is, it's fun when it works and it's a disaster when it doesn't.
It certainly cuts both ways. I think that's a good summarization of it. Dude, have you, last California thing, have you heard or at least know about the burger franchise In-N-Out?
I've heard of it, but I've never been. Yeah.
I think they're only in 7 states on the southwest coast of the US. People have seen the logo and many people have listeners have been there and tried it out. So the first one I've heard of it. I've heard it's very famous. People go, it's like a thing you go try when you're in California. So the first one we saw in LA was near Hollywood, like the day of the Grammys or the Oscars or the... Dude, I'm so out of touch with this
stuff. I think it would have been the Oscars recently. I mean, I don't know.
That's the movies one, right? Yes, the Oscars.
Yeah. All I heard, and I didn't even watch any part of it, is John Cena was almost naked. That's the only thing I heard about it.
But you can't see John Cena. How did anyone know? So I expect this place to be jammed. Because it's the day of the Oscars in Hollywood. So, okay, this place is jammed. It's probably all tourists. I saw several more. And one including, like, not a touristy area, nor like, inner downtown San Diego, in kind of, like, not even, like, the best area. And I kid you not, the drive-thru had 20 cars each line. And there were 2 lines. The inside was like an absolute zoo, a chaos. It's not like, it's not tourists. This is real people who live there. And I've never seen anything like it. The hype around this burger joint, the locals like stand by it. They love it. And I suspect there is no better unit economics per location of any fast food concept in the world. Like, I can't think of any location-based economics that compares to it, anything close to it. I was amazed. I couldn't believe it. I thought the food was extremely average, but people really love it.
They get you in and out, yeah. Yeah.
And it's pretty cheap. Like, it's not, it's still pretty cheap. Like, fries are $2, a burger's $3.50. Like, it's not expensive.
Kind of reminds me of, because I have family in Syracuse, and we went to Chick-fil-A over there. Same kind of thing. There's like 2 drive-through lanes, and you think the line is going to be pretty long. And within like 10 minutes, you're like, you have your food, you've ordered and everything. So they're pretty efficient. Obviously, I haven't been to that one, but it kind of reminds me of that, the way you explain it.
There's actually people on foot that come and take your order way, way back.
Yeah. Well, they did the same, yeah, Chick-fil-A too. So I think it's, okay. Yeah, so it sounds very similar, yeah.
But it was so like America, just the whole thing is just so America. But dude, I would love to see the financials of this company. It's privately owned, no plans of ever going public from my quick research. I would love to see this thing go public and get a look under the hood, because it is a real phenomenon. It's unbelievable to be there and to look at it And to see people wait that long for a burger, frankly, I think is better at McDonald's. But, you know, that might be a hot take. Who knows?
I don't know. For me, I love my burgers just like chip trucks. Just because I find them like just, you know, the meat doesn't taste weird. It tastes like a burger at home and stuff like that. And the fries are always the best I find at chip trucks. But you can't replicate that as much as you would with a chain, right?
And the fries are always hot when you get it from those things.
Oh, yeah.
The fries at In-N-Out were legitimately not even lukewarm. They were cold. So, yeah. I liked your first topic. I have certainly my takes on this as well.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how you're going to take this one.
Yeah, no. And so this was inspired by Jerry, who's one of our listeners from the UK. Big thank you for making the podcast international, by the way. Obviously, we have listeners around the world, but the majority is in Canada. And his question was centered around NVIDIA and kind of the luck aspect around it. But I'm going to take it a bit more as, you know, how much does luck have influence on investings and whether you have good returns or not? And his question, just to summarize it, was, you know, how lucky were people who bought NVIDIA around September, October of 2022 when it kind of bottomed because the valuations was still high at the time. Now, I agree the valuation wasn't cheap in a traditional way with NVIDIA trading in the high 40s on both a price to free cash flow and price to earnings basis. However, I will push back a little bit where that valuation, if you look at NVIDIA, it was more like the last 5-6 years. It was definitely towards the lower end, but as a general rule, I mean, kind of everything tech was a bit down around that point in time. It's pretty much when I think we bought them in 2022 for tech stocks, and then everything started picking back up afterwards. And my view is that there's a luck aspect obviously centered around that because, you know, around the launch of ChatGPT, and that happened in November 30th, 2022. So clearly, people that bought it around the bottom, September, October. You know, some people may have read or had information that something like this may be coming soon. But I think, you know, to know what impact it would actually have on NVIDIA, there's definitely at least a decent or fairly large element of luck, at least to the investors that were probably not as well informed as some other investors in the AI space. And obviously, being able to anticipate how much of a, you know, kind of arms race, I would say probably the best term to use here, from the big tech company to build up the infrastructure needed to use those large language models and what impact it would have on NVIDIA. I think obviously that would have been very hard to foresee that. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
If you look at revision history on estimates, the estimates skyrocketed right after this point when every analyst covering the name may have had insights into, you know, how cutting edge their GPUs were. I think that was actually consensus across anyone who studied the sector really well. So it was well known that NVIDIA was leading it, especially with their compiler language called CUDA, that they were leading both the hardware and the software when it comes to GPUs and how it will help AI. Because that's the way GPUs work, and it's able to do all those computations in parallel, was just so much better than anything that anyone else had built. So people knew that they were the industry leader. But to your point there, even people who studied the business in and out as their job, you know, covering NVIDIA stock professionally as an analyst, revision history on forward estimates skyrocketed once we saw the demand order and guidance from NVIDIA. So that was not consensus whatsoever that there was going to be that arms race, that the data center was not only going to grow, you know, double year over year, but double quarter over quarter. Like, that was not well understood by anyone. And so that's why the stock went nuts. So if you were to look at it back then on a valuation perspective, on a forward metric, it was like incredibly, incredibly cheap. Now, where I don't think was lucky is people who saw those forward estimates and thought, this stock is incredibly, incredibly cheap. Even after it had like doubled last year, it was only trading at high teens forward earnings. And that stock's like 3x since then. So I don't think it's lucky that people who are really paying attention to the tech and paying attention to the story on the data center. But of course, hindsight 2020, now 2 years later, like it's pretty easy to see that there was going to be a compute build out.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were probably, the way I probably see it, and I'm a bit different than you here, is I think they were probably right for the wrong reasons. I don't think they first saw how quickly it would build up, but they knew that, you know, maybe they had an idea of it would be a big tailwind for them, but the time frame, obviously, they probably had more difficulties. I mean, I think we were seeing it with how the prices reacted and analysts and everyone. So I think that's fair to say. I mean, I think just to extend, I don't think anyone anticipated how quickly the buildup and the demand would be for those chips. So that's where, I mean, maybe the luck aspect is a little bit there. But again, if someone invested then with the idea of honing it for like 5, 6, 7 years, then I think the time aspect kind of negates the luck aspect a little bit, because then you're looking at it from a longer time frame, whereas someone who invested then and be like, okay, I'll invest for like a year because I think it's happening in a year, I think there's a much larger element of luck there.
Fair enough.
And just to continue on the luck aspect, and maybe you'll disagree with me here, but I did ask, speaking of ChatGPT, what is luck? So they responded, obviously, a longer answer, but the first sentence, I think, sums it up pretty well. Luck is a concept that refers to the experience of notably positive, negative, or improbable events. So I think, do you agree with the definition? I think that's a pretty decent definition of luck.
If I was to define luck...
Or how would you? Yeah. GPT.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about luck later. But the way I define luck is encountering unlikely events to the positive. I know it says here positive, negative, or improbable. I don't think of luck ever as like I got lucky and it was a negative outcome. But maybe by definition, yeah. I'm wrong. I'm not sure.
I know what you're saying. For me, I would place unlucky and lucky kind of just the same. It's just
right. I guess unlucky.
Yeah, exactly. That's unlucky. Kind of the way I would see it. But personally, I don't think it's possible to completely eliminate luck when investing in a specific company, no matter how well you know a specific company, because there's always going to be an element of luck in an investment. There's countless examples of that, but I'll just say a couple here. I don't know if you remember PG&E, so Pacific Gas and Electric, back in 2019, they had to declare bankruptcy because they were a utility and they were held responsible for some forest fires in California. And typically a utility, I mean, is considered to be as safe as it gets, right, in terms of equity investment. And that's a bit of an unforeseen event. Obviously, it wasn't a zero probability because there was a small chance, I'm sure, no matter how small, that it could happen. But there's definitely probably a certain series of unfortunate events that kind of led to that and having them file for bankruptcy. Another one is, you know, companies that got completely crushed because of COVID-19 and never fully recovered. I know some are still theirs, but if you look at, for example, the cruise ships, they are still operating, but they're definitely not in as good a shape as they were back then. Obviously, some companies did very well, some others didn't. Or on the other side, companies that completely like took off and are still doing quite well today because of COVID-19 pandemic and how that's changed the way we work or interact and all these things. So those are kind of example to me that there is definitely an element of luck. But to be fair, there's definitely companies that will be more dependent on luck components than others. I mean, I think like biotech companies, right, that are testing out these new treatments. I mean, they can do all the research day one, but until they start testing that, I don't want to say like it's not a space I know super well, but there has to be an element of luck that what they're studying and their kind of the research they've done already will actually result in the expected or the hope results when they start doing all the testing. So I think, you know, my view is that there's definitely an element of luck in every investment. I think for some investment, it's incredibly low, but it's a non-zero impact. There's just things that are unforeseen or a very, very small probability that most investors would not even place any probability on that can happen. And obviously, that's where I think the luck component comes in. But I think you can also mitigate that through diversification, not only through single asset class, like such as stocks. So not only diversifying with just a lot of stocks, but also different asset classes, also allocating a smaller allocation if you think there's a bigger luck element tied to the returns of a company. Another example I can give is, a few years back with Virgin Galaxy. Like a lot of people were almost like gambling on that, if you'd like. Well, I mean, a lot of things had to go right for Virgin to do well in the future.
That was the Chamath SPAC, right? I think it was a...
Was it a SPAC? Yeah.
It was a Chamath SPAC. I think I just said Chamath SPAC. He put out the four IPO A, B, C, D, I believe. And Virgin Galactic was one of them.
And I mean, that's an example, but obviously, I think the way I try to look at things is just assessing the probabilities of a unforeseen event or improbable event, whatever you want to call it, because there are some events that whatever investment you're doing, there are certain type of events that you probably are not assigning any probabilities. And I try to assign, even if it's a small probability, to just, you know, the possibility of my investment not doing well or incredibly bad because, you know, let's say there's a 2% chance of like something unforeseen that affects completely their business. And I try to incorporate that when I actually make an investment in a specific company, if that makes sense.
The book that I read last year, the Morgan Housel one, has a lot of good thoughts on this.
I was thinking about that one.
In general, just like these extremely kind of random outcomes, like random events that dictate so much of the future and are completely kind of unknowable.
Yeah.
And impossible to predict. And I think there is that element of what we'll call luck or randomness or whatever you might want to call it, that's definitely a factor and has a huge outcome on everything moving forward. And read Morgan's book. I mean, there's so many countless examples of
this. Yeah, I did. You know, I know.
You did. To the listeners, read the book. It has lots of good thoughts on this. That being said, there are a couple examples here that I'm thinking of, especially on the tech side, whether it's AI and video or whatever else here. The COVID example, moving forward, a lot of stuff. There is a couple examples here where luck just, or some random event just brought forward a lot of momentum to a trend that was already happening. Whether it was e-commerce or AI, there's these kind of outlier events or launches or things that happen that kind of just like 5 years happen in 2 days. Among the like long trend that it probably would have gotten there regardless, just might have taken an extra 5 years. So there is situations where investors can position themselves in a way for luck to happen to them or for outsized returns to happen to them or for a tail outcome so far out on a normal distribution curve to stumble upon their way. Like that's how I think about luck when it comes to investing.
No, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and I mean, maybe for me, it's also because I come from a bit of a poker background, right? And you have very few situations where, like, I mean, there are certain situations that the situation is done and there's not really a luck element because, you know, all the cards have been dealt. And as long as you don't fold, you'll win the hand. But, you know, when there's still cards remaining, even if you have a 98% chance probability to win, I've seen the 2% happen. You tend to remember the 2% when it happens against you. You don't really remember it when it happens in your favor, but that's just the magic of the human brain. But I just found it fascinating because Morgan's book, I think, is great because he, if I remember correctly, one of the things he says in the book is that the probability of something bad happening is actually quite high. Because if you add in all the different probabilities that, you know, a hurricane might happen, the pandemic might happen, a major war might happen. If you had all these things, a solar flare might happen. Like, if you had them all up, the probability of one of them happening is actually quite high in any given year.
Right. And it's like, if it can happen on a long enough time horizon, it will happen. Mm-hmm. It's like the thing from Interstellar. There's some law in there, some space thing in there. No, and I think that this is directionally correct. Luck in my mind around career or things that you want to make happen that don't rely on a lot of outside forces to go right or some macro perfect storm to occur. I think of luck a lot differently in luck being surface area. And the same way that a fisherman tries to catch fish is if you're trying to catch fish and you have a net set up at your camp, it's lucky if a fish swims in there during a short period of time, just that it's just not very common. But if you had a net that was 10, 20 times bigger, took more surface area and was positioned in a more effective spot, you've now changed your odds of success. And so that same way that net has a larger like volumetric area for fish to swim through, luck is a surface area in the fact that the more times you have luck being able to come across your plate, then you can increase your odds of success. And so when it comes to pure luck, like say it's like rolling dice, like there's nothing I can do really to change the odds of a standard normal set of dice. Dice, if I roll them infinite amount of times, I'll come up with a distribution curve of combinations of how I could roll two dice. That's not going to change. That's like straight up just true statistics and mathematical probability. Where luck becomes a little bit more abstract is, oh, he just got lucky, you know, like that type of saying, or that might be true. But what people don't see in the background is that person expanding their surface area of luck to happen. So this is where it becomes like, you know, luck in a more, you know, abstract version of it and luck in the like true probabilistic statistic version of it. If I roll two dice 10,000 times.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. And I mean, it's maybe it's also like the way our brains think, right? For me, it's always like, I don't know why, I just come back to thinking probabilities too. That's kind of what drives me a whole lot. So I always try to assign a probability just based on that. But I guess the last thing I'll mention is someone could do, like, you know, we're thinking about a company. They could do all the research. They can have the best thesis. Everything makes sense. Everything lines up. And, you know, something that's out of their control or unforeseen kind of happens that puts that out to the side, right? But I think at the end of the day, if you do the work and you have conviction in what you believe, I think more often than not, luck won't play a big part in it. I think that's probably the way I would see it. Yeah.
Moving on to investors that maybe got very lucky if they were able to hold on. To hold on the whole time.
Speaking of luck.
Yeah, there's this graphic that's been going around on LinkedIn, which has been, it shows 9 companies and their total return since February 2004. And so that data is from February 2004 to February 2024. So as of, you know, a month ago as of recording. So 20 years of performance, and it basically shows how $10,000 invested in a bunch of stocks evolved over time. And it shows a bunch of huge mega winners that you made boatloads of money on just a $10,000 investment. And these types of backtest performances are not always particularly useful, because hindsight is 2020 and survivorship bias is a real problem when it comes to backtesting. survivorship bias kind of throws out a lot of the value you can learn from backtesting. And so why am I bringing up this graphic that's been going viral? Because I actually looked into the list and I thought that there was something more interesting than just looking at the list right off the gate. So then the companies are Apple, which would be total return. So this includes dividends. Your $10,000 investment would have turned into $527,887. So over $500,000. I'm not going to read out the amounts of all of them, but in second place, NVIDIA, third place, Monster Beverage, Intuitive Surgical, Booking Holdings, Netflix, Old Dominion, Amazon, and Regeneron. So many of those companies you probably have heard of or know. For those who are not familiar with Old Dominion or Regeneron, there's probably the two smaller names. Old Dominion is a trucking company. It's very similar to a TFI International. Brad Jacobs, who started ODFL, XPO Logistics, beast, absolute beast. Was it Brad Jacobs that started Old Dominion? Hold on, let me fact check that. Founder, Old Dominion, was it Brad Jacobs?
I'm not sure, yeah.
I know he did the, he's a roll-up guy. I know he did XPO Logistics, maybe not Old Dominion Freightland. Anyways, trekking company, Regeneron is a pharmaceutical company that uses, the description of it is a lot of big words that my brain doesn't understand. This list though, if you look at a lot of other companies that are just outside of that list, you have Axon, you have Domino's Pizza. This, like, some names that you'd be very shocked on their huge performance over the last 20 years. So what can we learn from this? What can we learn from the names that are on this list? Simone, when you look at this list, do you have any first thoughts right when you see it among the mega winners over the last 20 years?
To me, I just find it a bit dangerous because a lot of beginner investor will see this and then they'll try to get these kind of returns and not fully understand. And then they'll navigate around like penny stocks to try and get the next, you know, Apple, because it was worth way less back in 2004. I don't know what the price per share was back then, I guess split adjusted. But I think that's the first thing that comes to mind, because I know as well as you do, when I see this, I'm like, this is just a tiny fraction of the whole investment or stock investing story since February of 2024.
Really good point. Many of these companies have split many times over. And that can be quite dangerous, because casual beginner investors, like Apple is now, you know, hundreds of dollars. It used to be like 4 cents. These companies did not IPO as penny stocks. They IPO'd typically somewhere between 10 and 50 bucks back in the day, split them a million times, and the math works out to 4 cents a share. So first point of being highly misled to, you know, beginner investors. Now, I agree with you. There's not a whole lot to learn there. And then I thought, let's look at Apple, NVIDIA, Intuitive Surgical, arguably Amazon and Domino's Pizza as well. Axon for sure, which, by the way, since in the last 22.8 years has returned 53,000%, 792 CAGR at 32% since inception. Even Tesla. Let's look at those names, okay? They have all combined a hardware and software moat together, okay? Apple for sure. NVIDIA for sure. Intuitive Surgical for sure. Arguably Amazon, at least bridging the gap between tech and physical. Axon for sure. Domino's Pizza connect. They were the first, like, hey, what if we just digitize pizza? Tesla for sure, with the tech inside the car.
What about Regeneron?
Regeneron uses big words that I don't understand. So, you know, like 6 out of the top 12 names right there all share a really common characteristic around bridging a physical product with a software product that makes it really, really sticky. Look at the Bloomberg terminal. That's another classic example. There are all of these really enduring products that have owned the gates and the software. They've been gatekeepers of the ecosystem and own that internal software. I mean, look no further than Apple. Like that's the prime example. Axon's been leading the way with their hardware and software together for police forces. So that's one lesson that I learned from right away, and I'm going to be thinking about more and more as I go. I really like Uber stock right now. The price has run up so much. I should have bought it when I told you I really liked it before, but I didn't. That's another company connecting the physical and digital. It's using software to connect the physical world. Airbnb is another example. Okay, so that's one thing I thought of. Number two, they have all faced intense drawdowns. Drawdowns that would make you feel like these companies would be left for dead multiple times over their story. I just went on FinChat price target. I typed in a bunch of the tickers and pressed drawdown setting. They've all been in situations where they lose more than half their value, sometimes all at the same time. 01, 08.
March 2000, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, they didn't quite get half off there, but they faced at least 25% drawdowns there. Many have faced over 80% drawdowns. Some of them have faced more than 90% drawdowns during that time, multiple times, including Booking Holdings. Many of them have looked left for dead a couple of times during that story. The market has hated them multiple times. And it's not just like one black swan event happened. Like there have been multiple times in this 20-year period where a lot of these companies didn't look interesting at all and were on massive, massive drawdowns. And only the investors who got to ride that huge wealth wave were the ones that focused on the fundamentals and not the narrative. Look at Meta last year. Look at maybe what's happening with Google this year. I don't know. And so it's important to kind of focus on the fundamentals, the real structure of these businesses. You know, are they really intact or is the market just selling them off in a major way? So that's obviously a lot harder when it's happening. It's a lot harder to swim against the current when it's happening. But you have to remind yourself, all of these companies that have had huge success have had severe, intense drawdowns. So you know what you're signing up for, right? Like, it's not the norm for these companies to CAGR at a 30 bagger without any volatility. That is not the norm. It is exactly the opposite of that. And so I think it's instructive to just learn from which companies have done well, what are some of the characteristics of them, and that if you are going to be a long-term investor in individual equities or the broader index, you're signing up for volatility and you're signing up for extreme drawdowns, including many of them over 80%.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point because it's, you know, people will see these graphs. And again, I kind of come back to newer investors and they're like, oh, wow, like if I invested in Apple, you know, I'd be rich by now if I put $10,000 or $20,000 back then. And they see that. And I think it's really important to remind people that you need to understand the business pretty well to be able to hold the company for that long and not panic when there's a drawdown, because it's much easier said than done. If you zoom out 20 years, you see these returns like, oh, like it's, you know, look at this investor. It's easy for him or her. Like they invested in that. They got great returns just because of that one stock. Well, I'm sure there was a lot more people that invested in Apple and a few years down the line, they just panic and they sold it and they didn't hang on to it and have all these amazing returns. It's much easier, like having gone through drawdowns. I think we've both been through some significant drawdowns for names we hold. I think we're pretty good at, you know, staying the course if we have conviction in it. For me, obviously, it's not a company, but Bitcoin, I've seen quite a few drawdowns there. It's easier said than done. I'll just say that. Like sometimes people will see these graphs and they just think like, oh, I just need to do that. Well, make sure you do the work, because when it's happening, you know, fear is a powerful motivator.
It is. Fear is a powerful motivator, and fear is a powerful storyteller. fear is the most powerful emotion a storyteller can kind of use. And what that really relates to is the stories that people create around companies, the stories that are crafted around a company's direction one way or another. And it usually starts with a little bit of price sentiment, right? It usually starts with a little bit of negative price sentiment. I mean, in the last like month, I don't have any really particularly hot takes beyond what I've had about Google, which I think that change is bad for every monopoly, and I adjusted my portfolio that way. But in the last 2 months, we have seen everyone say there is cultural rot inside of Google. It is a hellscape, woke, rotting company. Sundar needs to be replaced immediately. We need to fire every engineer that's out there. Right-size the cost structure. Stop innovating. This company sucks. Two, Sundar is going to pull off a deal with Apple for Siri. He's a genius. This company is amazing. They're going to win AI. Like, literally in a month and a half, I've seen that unfold on most public forums, a lot of professional discussions, everywhere you look, man, like podcasts. So the narrative
I've seen it and I've heard it.
So the narrative can be twisted and spun very quickly. Here's a little hot take, okay? Company culture doesn't change in 2 months. Company culture takes a long, long time. And I actually do think that these big tech companies do need a shakeup, and that just because the stock rallied a little bit doesn't mean that they've fixed their issues. That's the story, both on the upside and the downside, that price can drive.
No, I think that's definitely a fair point. I don't have much to say about that because I agree. I mean, it's the market can be, people can panic based on headlines. People can be really short-term focused. Obviously, I think there's at least questions to be asked if you're talking about Alphabet and Google, because I remember when ChatGPT came out, people were panicking that Google search would just, go away and Google would be a shell of itself. And obviously search is still there. Will it happen eventually? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But one thing that was happening at the time, and I think it's shifted a little bit, is people were like, oh, well, wait till Google comes out with their AI tools, right? Because they've been working on that. And I think now the perception is kind of not sure, right? They're not sure really where Google is at, because there's been a few events that high profile events where they didn't show as well as people expected. But I think it's good to just take a step back and, maybe if you have a position, just take a step back. Wait till things settle down and then make a decision whether you want to continue being an investor in the business. And if you want to invest in the business, maybe it's just good to take a step back, let the dust settle a little bit in the next few quarters, see how things progress. Because this space, as well as probably anyone, it moves very quickly. So in 6 months, you can get a whole lot of information on where things are going.
I find it mind-blowing. By the way, I'm long Google. It's like 3% position. So with that context in mind, I am mind blown how that organization could have released a product that was so riddled with trying to be very careful when it comes to woke identity politics. Yet the same team will launch a completely false Gemini computer vision demo where they showed
that one.
You know the one?
Yeah.
It was completely faked.
Yeah. I think that's the one where they like basically text to image, but they basically, it wasn't the AI doing it. It's them that kind of made sure it did it that way type of deal, right? Yeah.
Yeah. They shopped a video pretty well to make it look like it was, very impressive. And I think that the demo that they did, I think that their tech will get there soon. But the fact that they were so behind that they had to release a fake video promoting it and then apologize on it, it's just like, what are you guys doing, man? Like, that's These are the same people who are so careful to release anything that says anything racist on their AI, yet they will just fake a video. Like, same people. It's, I don't understand how that character type exists.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably, I mean, it's hard to say that, argue it's not a culture thing, but at the same time, it's funny because they were taking their time. It looked like Google, I mean, everything I was hearing, and I think you as well, right? Like prior to 2022 or prior to November 22 is like, oh, Google's really like ahead of everyone. They're just making sure everything is good. They want to be sure that everything is like tip top, you know, perfectly, not perfect,
all
but
buttoned up.
All buttoned up, everything is well done before they release it. And then OpenAI came out with ChatGPT and it's almost like they panicked. And then it was like, okay, screw this. We're just releasing products and not, you know, not doing the proper testing. Like, I just don't understand why they couldn't find a happy middle, maybe.
So much pressure, investor pressure.
Yeah, but at the same time, everything. I mean, I think they are probably seeing now that, you know, potential clients would use this technology, they'd rather wait a little bit and get a product that's actually good than, you know, these botched presentation or botched products. Like, I don't know about you, but I'd rather wait a little longer and, you know, have a product that's amazing than, you know, trying something and it's completely crap and it just doesn't fit the bill. I don't know. To me, there's definitely a reputation thing for Google right now where they can't, I don't think they can mess up again on this. They have to make sure they get it right going forward because after a couple times or two, three times of messing it up, I don't think people will give them that much leeway going forward.
Yep, agreed. Thanks for listening to the pod, folks. We really appreciate you tuning in. We are here every Monday and Thursday. Has the show been going on? I've been out of the loop. The show's been going on.
Yeah, the show's been going on. Yeah, we had had a guest on Monday, last Monday, a financial planner. I think the feedback was really good, especially nice. The timing was quite good with that CBC investigation on big banks just pushing, shilling products on consumers that are high fees and boost bank profits. So it was a good timing to see what...
Did you guys discuss that?
We actually talked a little bit about it, but we had recorded like three, four weeks before. So it was kind of funny that we had touched on the subject of high fees and these like advisors in air quotes at banks that are putting people in 2%, 2.5% mutual funds that are performing poorly. So no, it was a really good interview, good feedback that I've had so far too.
I would say we should pencil in for next episode discussing that because you and I were texting back and forth just like Canadians who want to start investing, the worst thing they can do is walk into a large Canadian bank and say, hey, take my money. It's probably the worst thing they can do. I mean, I can't think of that many worse ideas.
And it's too bad because people end up going there trusting their banks, right? Like they think they will, like I think most people when they go to a bank and they want to talk about investing and stuff like that, I think they go in with the expectation that sure, the bank will make some money, like they'll get a fee, that's fine. They're providing a service, but not with the expectation that the bank will try to essentially screw them over. That's basically what they're doing. Yeah.
Right. Well, that does it for this episode, folks. So much to discuss. We'll have to be another episode. I'm here Mondays. Dan Kent is discussing earnings with Simone every Thursday. You can support the show at jointci.com. You get my portfolio, you get Simone's portfolio, you get Dan's portfolio update every single month, and you get this podcast on video, as well as if you are a real estate investor, if you are eyeing buying your first home, if you are currently a homeowner and thinking about, you know, diversifying the portfolio with real estate as well, you should listen to the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast. They're probably over 150 episodes at this point now. I'd have to check.
I think so. Yeah.
They've been cooking it.
I just listened to an episode this morning. So it was them going over some recent surveys about the economic prospect for Canadians. Spoiler alert, it's not good. It's pretty good.
How grim was that? I can just picture Dan being pretty grim about it.
The Baron Chief, Dan.
Dan Foch, the Baron Chief. So if you're into that real estate wise and you have not yet checked out the show, that is at the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast on your podcast player. See you in a few days. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Canadian Investor Podcast should not be construed as investment or financial advice. The hosts and guests featured may own securities or assets discussed on this podcast. Always do your own due diligence or consult with a financial professional before making any financial or investment decisions.